internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
War Women and War Nelly. Top the day as Back Time looks at the events that top off October 29th. Today in 1940, the first peacetime military draft began in the U.S. A little over a year later, it would turn into a wartime draft as the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. It was on this day in 1966 the National Organization for Women was founded, forever making the greeting, "Hey babe, how you doing?" a little bit awkward. And today in 1973, O.J. Simpson set two NFL records. He ran 39 times for 157 yards and rushed for a total of over 1,000 yards in only seven games. All of that running would prove good practice about 20 years later, if you know what I mean. That's Back Time for October 29th. This is your announcer speaking.
Richard Branson purchases the remainder of the North Pole. It's the Onion Radio News. This is Doyle Redland reporting. English business tycoon Richard Branson paid over $675,000 for all 52 square miles of the rapidly melting North Pole today. The billionaire told reporters of plans to turn the once foreboding mass of ice into a five-star traveling ski resort.
"The hardest part is to keep it from melting away completely and teaching the Eskimos how to serve margaritas."
In 2002, Branson purchased the last Stone Age tribe in New Guinea and sent them into outer space because he could. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Cross-Dressing Halloween Costume Wearer.
Mr. Cross-Dressing Halloween Costume Wearer.
We know how you longingly look in your wife's closet when she's away at her mother's, wondering to yourself how a slinky silk cocktail dress would feel against your manly skin.
Sometimes you just want to feel pretty.
You've killed two birds with one stone, Mr. Cross-Dressing Halloween Costume Wearer, creating a party costume and satisfying your deepest desires.
You sure?
Control top pantyhose sure does the trick.
No more tummy bulge, yeah.
So this Halloween, when you see Ed from shipping in a wig, makeup, and a sequined evening gown, make sure to catcall and compliment Mr. Cross-Dressing Halloween Costume Wearer, a real American hero.
Mr. Cross-Dressing Halloween Costume Wearer.
All those shoes are to die for. Do they come in a size 13?
From high atop the LA Talk Radio building, it's time for Sam and Susie in the Morning.
Sam and Susie in the Morning.
Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Wednesday, October 29th. This is Hump Day today. And this is Sam, of course, and Susie is not in today.
No, she's not.
No, she was not able to make it, and her voice got really, really deep this morning. And this is, of course, Mr. T.J. McCormick.
Yes, how are you? Good morning, everybody.
Yes.
Good morning.
Yes, definitely our famous host.
Yes.
Becoming famous and infamous.
Yes.
At noon.
Yes.
Good morning to you, my friend.
Yes. Yes, good morning. Good morning, Sam. Good morning, guys. Nice to be here. I love doing this. It gets my juices flowing and gets me ready for the rest of the day.
Early in the morning.
Yes, huh? This is verbal jogging for me.
Yeah.
That's what it is. This is a verbal mental jog. A brisk run for me to get up and get in here at 9 a.m. with you. It's cool.
I love early mornings. You know, yeah. I'm definitely a day person. You know, how about you?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yes? That's why the other night I was like asleep on my feet when we were out at that thing. Yeah, no, I'm up at the best day for me starts when I'm able to get up by 5.
Yeah.
If I'm able to be up by 5 a.m., then I'm really, really happy. And with the baby coming, I should have some wonderful days ahead of me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There won't be such thing as night and day. It'll be just one continuous thing, pretty much.
Yeah. So I'm definitely – I haven't been a night person for a long time, but I used to be. Used to be.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a comic. I was on the road and I would do all my driving at night. when I was on the road, and I'd, you know, finish the gig, and, you know, if I was staying in town, I'd, you know, I'd be up until 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of them. Yeah, it's just, wow. You know.
But now you're a family man. You live in the valley, yeah. In the sleepy valley.
Yeah. I'm like a farmer. I live like a farmer. I'm up at 5. If I'm in bed by 10:30, it's way too late.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like I'm burning the midnight oil at 9:15. You know, I am absolutely a farmer. You know, the only thing missing is chickens and, you know, watering the cows.
We can arrange for those too.
Wonderful. Oh, yeah. I'll just find some Israeli neighbors. Yeah. And just, you know, do you want to hear about my friggin' morning?
Yes.
I tell you, Sam, this morning I'm getting really, really irritated with some stuff.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Knowing that I'm the type of guy who gets irritated at stuff, and knowing that I'm a kind of guy who has a history of being judgmental, I'm very judgmental,
right.
And I admit that about myself, and I try to work on it. And so anyway, one thing I try to do is I try to take a contrary action every now and then. I try to take into account some things I pick up from the Old Testament and the New Testament, different things. And one thing that I try to do is I try to make others who feel other people on the outside, outsiders, I try to make them feel a part of,
mm-hmm.
a part of society. I do my best. I don't do it all the time.
Right.
This morning I'm out, I'm running.
Mm-hmm.
I just started jogging. I was on my block. And it's about, I got a late start today. It's about maybe 6-ish. And I'm out there. And there's a guy, one of the bottle collectors, okay?
Yes.
He's got the shopping cart.
Uh-huh.
And I'm jogging along, and I didn't really quite notice him, but I kind of did. And I was in one of those modes where, it's early. I had just started jogging. My heart wasn't even pumping yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I must have just – he caught my eye, and I must have just kind of been sort of – gazing at him. You know, kind of like right. If you're walking along and like a squirrel sort of moves, you sort of like kind of look at the squirrel for a second.
Right.
And when I realize that I'm kind of staring at the guy, and that wasn't my intention,
right.
I do what I would have done anyway if I had been of clear mind. I do this with homeless people. I do this. I say good morning or good afternoon. I do it. Right. I try to look him in the eye.
You acknowledge them.
I acknowledge them. Right. I don't know. There's probably a place for this somewhere in the Talmud. about being a good person, living your life the right way. You know,
yeah.
Something. So basically, I try to do this every day, almost mm-hmm. every, because my instinct
right.
and the old TJ is to turn my nose up, make a face,
right.
and go, God.
So you consciously reach out to people.
I try to.
Like
I try right. to, and right. it's not because I'm a wonderful person. It's because I'm trying to be a better person.
I see. Okay.
And so anyway, so when I realized this was all a split second thing. When I finally realized that Jesus Christ, I'm kind of staring at this guy, and I don't want to make him feel bad. That's when I kind of good morning.
Right, right.
And now he didn't hear the good morning because the cart was making all this noise, mm-hmm. and he starts in with staring, bust your head wide open,
really?
Throwing vicious, disgusting threats.
Wow.
Now I took off my saint hat and I put on my. Fuck it. I was so mad. I was so – and I'm like, this is what I pay. This is what – I just cut the first – I just cut a check for the first half of our property taxes this year.
Mm-hmm.
More than $4,000 for the first installment of our property taxes.
That's a lot of money.
It's not what I'm paying – that's not what I'm paying property tax for. Mm. I'm not paying that kind of money. I didn't move to that neighborhood to have to be out at 6 in the morning face-to-face with a guy who's talking about splitting my head open.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's out there pulling a goddamn...
And they're everywhere, you know. I mean, I know on Sunday, every Sunday morning, there's a couple of guys with their noisy carts mm-hmm. and everything, looking for the bottles.
Yeah.
And they shout to each other, waking everybody up on the street.
Yeah.
And the same thing, you know, my wife tells me, she says, we came to live in Sherman Oaks. What the fuck is this?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And it's constantly noise and everything,
right.
you know. And
right.
I hear what you're saying.
And there's bleeding hearts out there. I'm telling you, there's bleeding hearts out there who say that you and I, you know what, we can get back. Hey, at least we have a window to shut.
Yeah.
At least we have an apartment.
Plus, you have to understand
house,
why he would be an angry person. You probably would be too if you had his fate. You know.
You know what though? And, I tell you what though. I've been angry in my life. Yeah. I have been so angry. I've never threatened anybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is a disgusting.
Well, but look who you're dealing with. I mean, this is a homeless man. You know, if he had any class or any education,
you
he would
what,
not be
man?
There.
You know what? Honestly, we're a society of enablers.
Mm-hmm.
We let this stuff happen because of rationale, quite frankly, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it makes my, honestly, I'm one of those people, I connect the dots most of the ills of society, I'm able to do it. I connect the dots, and it all goes back to liberalism for me and little liberal ideals. Like, for example, this whole bottle collecting thing. It drives me insane. Look, I'm like everybody else. I'm a regular guy. I don't want dirty rivers. I don't want pollution in the air. I'm a regular guy. I'm about to have a baby. I go out. I run. I want nice, clean air, clean water. Of course, we all do that. You go with these liberal policies that that involve mandatory recycling. And their big answer to mandatory recycling is put the big bins out. Well, you know, that's like putting out big old honey cakes at a picnic and then getting mad when the goddamn bees show up, okay? And the flies and stuff. Okay?
That's true.
And you see, now, there's bleeding hearts out there that would say, oh, nice, compare a human being to a fly. Mm-hmm. Now, you know what? Shut up. I'm making a point. And the point is, I argue with people who aren't even here. So the thing is that basically when you think about this system of recycling that we have, put your blue bins out same day, same time, every week, put the blue bins out, and let's just basically attract the friggin' flies, and let's let these people know, these entrepreneurs, what exactly, what day, what time your bin's going to be out so they can come by, and what, you know, I tell you think I'm pissed now, wait until I got an infant trying to sleep, and this rattling son of a bitch going to come down the street with his friggin' cot. Think how angry I'm going to be then when this baby finally gets to sleep, and this guy comes out. Again, it's just this liberalism we enable.
But you know what, TJ? Yeah. It's all relative. Okay, let me tell you. Okay, look how this is dwarfed compared to what we had to go through the past 6 days, okay? We're in an apartment building.
Right.
So they came to fix the hot water, whatever it was, okay? They replaced the boiler.
Okay.
We have not had hot fucking water since Friday.
Wow.
Since fucking Friday. Have you ever gone without a shower for a couple of days? It's not a great feeling.
So no.
So then you start taking really cold, pseudo showers. So they come for 2 days. Whoa. They come in, they run the water for 15 minutes. Now, mind you, what a waste of water that is. To show us, oh, eventually the hot water does come. That has been the case, but still, for the past 2 days, they come in and there's just no fucking hot water. You have to let it run for 15 minutes. So I'm asking you now, do we have any reason to sort of like get back at that fucking management company? Okay? To sort of like be compensated for it.
Yeah, I think
so. And I figured, you know what? Something that's reasonable to me is deduct $100 for every day that we were out of hot water.
I think so.
You know, from the rent.
Absolutely.
And let them go fuck themselves.
Right. Well, you pay rent based on the fact, on an agreement. There's an agreement there, an assumption. You assume that when you give them that big Sherman Oaks rent check, you're not over the hill. You're not in Hollywood somewhere. You're in Sherman Oaks, okay? And I know the neighborhood you're in. And so that big fat Sherman Oaks rent check, you give them that. Based on the assumption that in return, you're going to get a secure building and you're going to get the electricity and the water. This was not a natural disaster. This was not an earthquake.
This was just a fuck up. They always pull this shit on Friday afternoons and then on the weekend, you know, emergency numbers, they don't work.
No, of course
it's
not.
It's irrelevant. They
People
don't give a
out.
Shit.
No, they don't. They really don't care. Really? They don't care. Because what are they? Because they know, really, in effect, they know that, you know, it's almost like the accountability, you know, these Congress people, they know that they're not going to be voted at all because they know nobody knows enough. Same thing. These people know that, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Move. They're like, you know, what are you going to do? Move.
Right.
You're going to go through all the hassle. You know, either you've been there for a while or you just moved in. What are you going to do? Pack everything up or you just unpacked? What are you going to move? F you.
No,
F
absolutely. You. That's what I'm saying. You know,
deduct
some fucking money.
If they
don't like it, let them take us to court and we'll talk about it.
Right. I think you know what? I mean, you can offer, you know, make the request.
Yeah.
You know, or first take, you know what? We're wondering what I would, the approach I would take is, I'm just wondering what were you guys, what was the conversation you guys were planning? Almost go at them from the point of view of like, it's a matter of fact. Not if you're going to compensate, but what were you guys thinking would be, what were you going to compensate us? So just curious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Say, you know, should we cut you a smaller check or are you guys going to pay us back? If you're wondering.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you assume that you spent every day at a hotel trying to fucking take showers and shit.
Right.
You know, probably $100 is a pretty good rate, I think, for a hotel.
I think. Yeah.
So 6 days, $600, and they can kiss my ass.
Yeah.
Anyway, something a little more exciting. We have an author we're going to call in a moment, and his name is Stephen Mansfield, TJ, and he wrote the book, The Faith of Barack Obama. Now, when this came around, I was intrigued by this because I think this is very relevant. I think a lot of people are concerned with Barack's you know, religious convictions and so forth. Uh-huh. I know I am very curious, and I know you as a conservative yeah. would really like to find out what's going on.
Yes.
So so we're going to take that. I have a lot of questions. So let me just quickly just bring up the number here. And I urge you guys, if you want to go to Amazon and look up the book so you can see what we're talking about. And this book was released, I believe, in August. And again, very, very relevant. So as you noticed, I'm trying to kill some time as I'm dialing the number. So let's try and get Mr. Mansfield on the line. All right. Hello? Oh, there we go. Okay.
Hello, this is Stephen.
Yes, Stephen Mansfield. Good morning to you. This is Sam from Sam and Susie in the Morning in Los Angeles. How are you doing this morning? Good, good. You'll be surprised to find out Susie's not here. So I have Mr. TJ McCormick, who is a conservative host on our station. And I think we both are very intrigued as to your book and the fact that you're bringing up at all the issue of the faith of Barack Obama. So when did you actually write this book? Is this something that you had to pretty much crank out quickly so it would be relevant and timely?
No, it didn't have to be done too quickly. I began to do the research for the book last year mm-hmm. and began to track Obama because I thought two things. First of all, there were a lot of myths floating around about his faith, and I knew they would be essential to the election. And then also, you know, where Obama is religiously is where the country's going. And so he just simply symbolizes what the trends are, and I wanted to be sure to capture those while they were relevant and forefront in people's minds.
Right, right. So you're saying there's several myths and people don't really understand Barack Obama. First, let's get it straight. What religion does he claim he is?
Well, he claims that he's Christian, mm-hmm. and he claims that he is Christian of a very theologically liberal, non-traditional type. He attends Trinity United Church of Christ. Of course, the United Church of Christ is one of the most liberal denominations in the country. And so Barack Obama, I think, is best understood as a serious believer in Jesus Christ, but theologically extremely liberal and therefore, of course, politically very liberal.
I see. So he's definitely not part of the what we know as the religious right. Is he actually pretty religious, would you say?
By all accounts, he is. He reads his Bible regularly. He was as regular as he could be in church throughout many years, despite having a family and, of course, a senatorial career. He prays with people. He's put faith at the foundation of his politics, has a lot of faith advisors around him. And many of the people I spoke to who are serious evangelicals, like Jim Wallace and Campolo and others, Bill Hybels, Rick Warren, all of them believe that he is a serious believer and have seen evidence of that in his life.
I see. So why is the subject of Islam keep coming up regarding Obama?
I think that he simply is, non-traditional, too new to our political scene, and too much of an unusual type for most people to feel comfortable. He has the broadest exposure to world religions of any candidate we've ever had. Mm-hmm. He lived overseas and practiced as a Muslim for a few years, not so much a Muslim personally, but under the tutelage of a Muslim stepfather and in a Muslim country. He really was an atheist for most of his life, for the first 20-some years, until after Columbia he finally made a confession of faith in Christianity. So I think that the 15% of Americans that the polls tell us still believe he's a Muslim are drawing that information from misinformation largely, but also from those approximately 4 years that he lived in Indonesia and had very strong Muslim influences in his life.
Right, right. So it's Muslim influences on the one hand, and then he had people like Reverend Wright, who started with that whole thing, and I thought this would really, really hurt Obama. How was he able to sort of dodge that and distance himself from this?
I think he did it two ways. First of all, when he stepped away from Trinity United Church of Christ, when he renounced his membership, I think people saw in him a sincerity, a willingness to distance himself from some of Wright's more extreme teachings. I think also all Americans have the experience of going to some church or synagogue or to some religious institution where they hear truth mixed with personal opinions, maybe extreme views they don't happen to share. As they say in the South, you know, eat the chicken and spit out the bones. Mm-hmm. I think Barack Obama very much explained to America that that's what he had been doing.
That was a way of spitting out the bones when he walked away from Trinity, disassociated himself. However, I think there's another portion of the population that would see it more as it was politically expedient for him. I think it strikes me that his arrival at Trinity and his departure were both very politically expedient moves. A man without a home religiously shows up on the steps of a massive $1 million, very influential African American church in Chicago, right about when he's trying to make his footprint politically there. And then he had been there for 20 years, and then he suddenly gets out when the whole world finds out about the vile views of Jeremiah Wright. So political expedience, he steps away. I don't really see much of a genuine aspect to Mr. Obama based on his enter or exit from Trinity.
Well, I certainly agree with you to some extent. There's no question, as Obama said himself, that he began to attend Trinity because he wanted to have some evidence of faith in his life. He was trying to make an appeal to the people on the south side of Chicago. At the same time, I think the evidence is that after being at Trinity for a while, and yes, having gone there initially for political reasons, he was genuinely captured by what was preached there. And yes, I agree with you. There's no question that had he never run for president, my guess is he would still be at Trinity. That he did, in fact, step away from Trinity because it was no longer politically expedient. When even the guest speakers like Father Flager were making wild-eyed statements from the pulpit of Trinity, Barack Obama knew he didn't want what was happening at Trinity laid around his neck. So, yes, you are largely correct, although I do believe there was a genuine connection of faith that happened once Barack began to attend Trinity.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, because, you know, you're hit with, if you're coming in with an open mind and an open heart looking for a spiritual connection and the way it's presented in an environment at Trinity, I would think, yeah, the chances are you're going to become enraptured and quite enamored.
Certainly.
Enamored with it.
I think
another point, one thing that strikes me too is that I'm sitting here and I'm one of those people, I like to know a little about a lot, especially, I'm kind of one of those Sun Tzu kind of guys. I like to get inside the mind of the enemy, so to speak. Paying attention as I do, I'm stunned when I hear certain things about certain moments in Barack Obama's life that literally come from out of left field. Here we are, a handful of days away, and I'm only just now hearing, I think for maybe the second time, because it's starting to ring a bell, about his time spent in Indonesia. Would you say that the media has done its share? I'm just basically this. There seems to be a large chunk of Barack Obama's life that is relatively unaccounted for, relatively uncharted. The time after the law review, I mean, there are years in New York City spent at Columbia. I have not seen one article that he published at the Harvard Law Review, or I haven't seen one student when he was a professor in Chicago. Has the media done their due diligence, in your estimation, in investigating this man's life in total, apart from the wonderful American dream story of the mixed race family and all those wonderful photos and, oh, look at this and there's that, okay, and the mom dying and this? There's a whole chunk of this guy's life nobody knows about, and I think the media has let America down.
Yeah, I agree with you largely. I would say that the media has not done its job as it normally would have another candidate, and we do therefore know less about Barack Obama than we do any candidate of recent memory. And I would say also that the Obama campaign has not done its job in making documents available and also portraying as a positive thing some of the very experiences that the right would portray as a negative. For example, right. if Barack Obama did, as he did, spend 4.5 years in Indonesia as a child, but never made a credible faith, a credible confession of faith in Islam, as Islamic doctrine itself says you can't do until you're in adolescence.
Uh-huh.
And he's exposed to the, this should be spun by the Obama campaign as a positive thing. Instead, yeah. they go silent and they don't provide documents. I'm sure you're aware that there's a charge that he actually was born in overseas and
yeah.
not even born in the States. Well, this is
yeah.
easily answered with documents, but the campaign has not done its job in providing those documents. So on the one hand, I think there's less fire than smoke on some of these issues. On the other hand, I think that the reason they continue to gain currency is that both the press and the campaign have done a very poor job of clearing up these issues.
Right. So in your book, have you brought up any points that you feel the media has not revealed about him that we should be concerned with?
Yes, I went into detail on his time in Indonesia, where he went to school, the fact that he went to a Catholic school as well as a public school in Indonesia. Many people say he went to a madrasa. That's not true. There are lots of things that have not been sort of sussed out here about his life. And I went to Trinity United Church of Christ, spent days there with the pastors and the congregation, attended many services, talked about a great many things that have never been brought forth about that church. Frankly, the things that people are concerned about are not much of an issue, and they don't seem to be concerned about things that are an issue because they don't know the story very well. So, yes, I think I found a number of things in the book that just aren't being discussed. And it's interesting to me, today, for example, I turn on CNN, there's a story about Barack Obama's faith, and they're approaching it as though the discussion's just beginning. It's like there's no depth to the story. There's no background. And for a guy who wrote a book on the faith of Barack Obama that came out 3 months ago, you know,
yeah.
that's a little frustrating to me. The press seems to have a very short memory when it comes to this man.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this may be an obvious question, but why is it important for us to know about the faith of Barack Obama at this point?
Well, standing here today, like you say, a handful of days before the election, the answer is because he's very likely to be the next president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Unless something happens in the next 6 days, or the polls are horribly wrong, and currently they're averaging about a 5-point lead for Obama, he's going to be the next president of the United States. He will be the first president of the United States not raised in a Christian home.
Mm-hmm.
He will be the first president of the United States to have practiced at length, even though informally, a non-Christian religion. I think what's most important is that even though he's politically of the left, he says in a way that's usually said on the right, that he's going to bring his faith into the Oval Office.
Yes.
And use it as a basis for policy. So we absolutely need to know what this man believes, and of any candidate, as I say in the book.
Wow.
If a man or a woman's faith is sincere, it's among the most important things about them. And so you really can't talk about how they're going to lead, what decisions they're going to make, unless you understand their faith. So Barack Obama is a man of a very clear, specific faith, and he plans to have it be a factor in his presidency. And given that presidency is likely to dawn here just in a few weeks, I think that Barack Obama's faith is one of the most important things we can know about our times.
Absolutely, and I have to agree with that because obviously faith often shapes people's views, I think, for the rest of their lives. And this is very timely. TJ, any other questions?
Other than just I'm grateful that someone had the foresight to go. I'm grateful to you, Mr. Mansfield, for shedding any light. I mean, I had not had a chance, and forgive me to read the book, but I had heard about your book, and I've heard you interviewed elsewhere in other media forums, and the thing is that I'm just grateful that any light has been shed from no matter where your book was coming from, and I see it as a very unbiased book because you've also written books. You also wrote the Faith of George W. Bush,
right?
So you know, this was an unbiased book, and as someone who really is, I'm more concerned about the truth than winning a political argument. I'm glad that this very unknown character has had some light shed on some portion of his life that other places aren't accounting for. So I'll just I'm good with the questions. I'm just grateful that you wrote the book.
Yeah, definitely. And
well,
and
you're very kind. You're very kind, and I appreciate it. I think one of the reasons we've had so few books on Obama of any substance is that his two books were so popular that most people didn't think they could contribute anything. But on his faith, I think there's been a great deal more to say, and I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you about it.
And I'm actually quite surprised that it got to go, that you even got the green. I'm sure if not but for the success of your previous books, I wouldn't be so sure. Actually, I'd love to get your opinion on this. I wonder what your opinion, if not but for the success and your notoriety based on other books and your stature within the community. I wonder if somebody with just the fresh idea of doing this would have gotten the green light. I'm wondering if that Upper East Side type of crowd that runs the publishing world, I wonder if you would have gotten the green light to do this book.
I think the answer is no, and I think the other reason that it's no is that I am known for being a conservative. I am a political conservative, and most of my books have either been about the Pope or George W. Bush or Winston Churchill, even though I'm actually far more moderate than my writing might appear. And so it took a while for them to be convinced that this wasn't just going to be sort of a coursey, hatchet job. And once they began to read the opening sections, they became aware that I was attempting a very objective look, which is exactly what I attempted to do. So, I don't think had I been an unknown and had I not allowed them to look at the early portions before making a final decision that I would have ever gotten this arrangement.
Yeah. Right.
Well, thank God you did.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you so much for coming on our show. I was looking forward to this, and I think it's very relevant. I know I've been concerned with whether it's rumors or truth about the faith of Barack Obama. So congratulations to you. Do you have any website or anything we can go to find out more?
Yes, my website is mansfieldgroup.com. Just my last name, Mansfield, with the word group, GROUP.com. And it's great being with you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much, and lots of success. I'm sure this book is going to be even more relevant once he's elected next week. So
I think you're right. Thank you for that.
All the best, Mr. Mansfield. All the best. Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Now that was fascinating, wouldn't
yes,
you say?
Yes, thank you. And I'd say he was good too.
Yes, and you before you brought up this last point, you sort of like were sort of baffled by something he said. Do you remember?
Yeah, I was. I really was. It was at first. It was totally foreign to me, and like I said, then it kind of came back as, oh yeah, he spent some time in Indonesia. Yeah, I am mystified and baffled at the temerity of this quote unquote now. I won't even call it's not enough to call them the liberal media, the quote unquote media, quote unquote news organization. I'm just blown away by how much none of us know about this guy.
Yeah,
I mean, literally, Sam, there are years missing from this guy's resume.
Oh yeah, really?
I mean, Sam, people talk about him being he's the smartest guy in the room. He went to Harvard, first African American editor of the Harvard Law Review. Then he spends time at Columbia University in New York. The guy spent time in Manhattan. All we know about is grew up in the mixed race family, sick mom, died young, all that stuff, formative years, grandmother.
Father left,
grandmother raises him, gets to Harvard. Mm-hmm. Boom. End of story until he resurfaces in Chicago as the community organizer.
Really?
All right? In between is all the years at Harvard. Let me ask you. You know how 60 Minutes does these interviews, okay? Mm-hmm. And you'll see, it'll be Steve Croft or Leslie Stahl will be sitting there, and it'll be a room full of people, okay? The interview will be facing a room full of about 10 or 15 people. They're all sitting on director's chairs or whatever, sort of high, low. And it's different people. Where is the interview with Barack Obama's students? You were a student of Barack. What was it like to be in a classroom of Barack? You were on his dorm floor at Harvard. What was he like? What was the young Barack Obama like? You were a classmate of Barack at Columbia. You were his neighbor. You had pizza. You had the pizza place around the corner from Barack Obama. When he came in, did he talk about political? Nothing. Mm-hmm. And Sam, I sound like Mo in Oregon. This sounds like a conspiracy
like
thing.
Like a conspiracy.
But you know what, man? My hand to God on a stack of Bibles, Sam, we know nothing about this guy in those 10 or 20 formative years. We're talking university years, the years during which he admitted, politically expediently admitted, right, that he had done some blow, done some drugs, whatever. Right. And you see, by the way, that's not the first point of all this. I'm just talking about those are the years where the one thing we know is that he admits that he had experimented with drugs and whatever. Yeah. I don't care. Right?
I kind of like that he smoked pot.
Sure. Yes. And so do I. And that's why. And that's why I say that it's not a big deal. But what I'm talking about is the only thing that he's admitted is what he figured. Well, let me get that out of the way, just in case anybody comes from out of the woodwork. But the media has done nothing. And again, I've given up. I mean, it's done. Obama's winning. The horse. There is no horse in the race for me anymore. I'm talking about literally the media has talk about being in the bag for a guy. They have done nothing. Nobody knows. So I'm sitting here when he mentioned Indonesia. I was like, Jesus Christ, that's right. This guy was in Indonesia.
Yeah. I don't know. You know. I mean, I don't know if we're really being a prejudice about this or whatever, but the fact of the matter is it does bother a lot of people that he was he dabbled in Islam at least, and there's been a lot of pain because of Islam in this country.
Yeah. And been a lot of pain because Islam all over the world.
Yes, absolutely.
Religion
but,
of love.
But especially here since we never really experienced it until 9/11.
Right.
You know, and suddenly we're surrounded by this, and people are saying, you know, I mean, look, I can understand, this is not necessarily my contention, but when people are saying, well, you know, how can we have a president with the middle name of Hussein, you know? So, yeah, it is silly.
It's silly because, these people are silly. Those that are the redneck people, you know, who are totally uninformed, and they hear that from one person. My concerns are the fact that, you know what, I know everything. I know everything that there is to know about John McCain. Mm-hmm. I know what his grandfather did.
Well, you seem to know a lot about Obama, too.
The thing is because I've had to go and find. And yet, here's the thing. All I know is a template for those years.
Right.
I'm telling you, it's not like I'm sitting here saying, I know about what happened in Colombia and nobody else knows. I know nothing. All I know is that he went to Columbia. He was the Harvard lawyer. He was a professor of law. How many presidents? Can you imagine? We're talking about a guy who's running for president. He was a professor of law at the University of Chicago, and we have not heard. We have not seen one article. And that's what they do. Professors publish articles and shit,
yes,
right?
Yes, all the time.
We have not seen one thing of his writing. We have not heard of one student. We're talking about the Messiah. We're talking about a modern day Kennedy meets King. We're talking about a smooth, loved all around the world. 100,000 people show up, and nobody wants to get one of his students in an interview.
Yeah,
nobody wants to get a professor who worked with them. Somebody. How is it that this Messiah? There's not one disciple out there of this Messiah that we're allowed. I tell you, and the thing is and left to your own devices to fill the blanks. I gotta wonder, what are they hiding? What is it that they're afraid is going to slip up? And I tell you, a good example is just the other day. I don't know if you heard these recordings. He was on NPR. He was on National Public Radio in 2001, back when he was, I think, just starting off in the Illinois legislature.
Right.
So here we are, 2001. Again, just coming out of that era that we're talking about that sort of just disappears. He goes to Harvard and then reappears in Chicago as a community organizer. Part of the, you know, so what we got a little window the other day. This recording came out, and he's talking to this woman, and he's saying how it's a shame that redistribution, that the courts didn't take redistribution far enough. Mm-hmm. It's a shame that the Constitution. This guy's going to be swearing to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. He says that it's a flawed document, not because all it does is say what the government can't do to you, rather than what it can do for you. This guy's going to he's going to swear to defend and uphold something that he thinks is flawed. And that's what I'm talking about. Harvard Law Review, law professor, these views that he espoused in the classroom, right. We're hearing nothing of it. And then here he is in 2001 talk about his views of the Constitution, redistributing wealth, all these things, right. Marxist socialist ideas. And what is the most fertile soil for Marxism and socialism in this country? Universities. Yeah. So that entire time of his life has been whitewashed, Sam. And I'm telling you, this is not a conspiracy theory, because people can go there and find the information is not there.
Oh, I see.
It doesn't exist. There's nothing.
Yeah.
And nobody's going digging. I'm telling you, this is what makes me nervous.
Why do you think all these people are excited about Obama? Is that because he's different?
He's different. End the war. Yeah. Stuffy white men with gray hair and blue suits and all that. And it's about time. And he talks a great game.
Right.
He talks. And again, I'd love for someone to tell me, beyond these unbelievable speeches, and he's even won me over at moments, at times, where I've gone, I said to my wife, Jesus Christ, he's good.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he's had these moments. He's an unbelievable communicator. Sam, people are in love with, don't forget, there are people that agree. There are people out there. I look at liberalism, like real liberalism, as really almost a mental deficiency. I look at it as a problem. Mm-hmm. People, as just, there's something that just doesn't exist in their minds. Mm-hmm. That concern, and I don't know what it is. I mean, I've had conversations with people who, you know, we're talking about taxes, for example, and they'll say to me, "Look, there are people out there that simply just, you know, they just don't know what they're doing with their money."
Yeah.
So we got to be able to hold. And I said, "Jesus Christ!" I said, "You really think that, don't you?" And like, yeah. So you know, when I say mental deficiency, that's more of a showbiz thing. I'm posturing for Radio Shock, but really, liberalism. It's a referendum on liberalism versus conservatism. The reason people look at this guy as a messiah, Sam, is because he has engendered a very lovely game of class warfare. Mm-hmm. All he's doing out there is telling everybody about what they have and what you don't, and I'm not going to get you to where they are, but I'm going to give you some of theirs.
Yeah.
it's basically, I have not heard one thing about inspiration from this guy. For all of his amazing speeches, all I've heard about is fairness and taken from them and given to you. I haven't heard anything about the amazing brilliance of America. I haven't heard anything about how you can be successful in this country.
Yeah, well, I don't see that McCain is offering us a lot more than that anyway, you know, so I don't know. Anyway, look, we've got a phone call. Let's take that. Good morning. You're on the air with Sam and TJ.
Hi, this is Dawn calling in.
Yes, Dawn, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, too.
Where are you calling us from?
I'm calling in from sunny Santa Monica.
Sunny Santa Monica. You like Santa Monica, TJ?
The People's Republic of Santa Monica. Yes.
Yeah, we got a big conservative here. You got to be careful.
Yes, good morning.
So Dawn, we've been trying to get you on the air for a while here. Why don't you tell us why you're calling, what it is that you want to tell us about?
Well, yeah, what I do is that I am a bliss guide, and I come up with sustainable solutions to complex problems. So I work with all sorts of different issues. I'm very different in the sense that I work with everything from business to spirituality to health to coaching. I have a master's from Harvard. And I've worked with people from Jerry Levin, the chairman of Time Warner, to Kofi, who's music producer, to Cher and Tina Turner. And I actually have been, you know, approached about writing articles about what's going on with the economic crisis. But my main gift is that I'm excellent at coming up with problems and helping individuals to get or organizations to where they need to be. So as opposed to just ideas, I think that developing solutions is a different focus.
I see. So how do you go about developing solutions for people?
Well, it would depend. For when I work, I also work, for example, on health issues. I work on infertility and cancer. Some people consider me an alternative healer, and then I'll also work on very complex business issues here, and now I'm working with him on business consulting for a business that he's launching as to what's the best way to do it. And for there, I also take an integral approach and look at all the stakeholders involved, who are the managers, the employees, the investors, and what's the best way to maximize value. My whole focus is maximizing what the individual or the organization wants.
Right. So you're saying you were a Harvard graduate, and then you got into this spiritual field.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, when my personal story is I unfortunately had a very difficult childhood. We ended up homeless, and I really had a choice of going a more criminal path versus staying centered. And when I was much younger, my great-grandmother sent me to some Indian shamans because she thought I was a very spiritual, peaceful person, even though I had so many things going wrong with regards to my childhood. And so that sort of laid a foundation for me to think of things in terms of abundance rather than going a path that would hurt people. And so I persevered through a lot of difficult personal situations and ended up attending Harvard. I was a successful corporate executive, a VP in entertainment, and had a near-fatal car crash about 4.5 years ago. And at that time decided, you know, what path do I really want to take? And it started off because doctors were asking me to talk to some of their patients, because even though I was more injured than their patients were, my car unfortunately was completely destroyed. I was healing at a faster rate, and I'm allergic to a lot of painkillers. So I had to do it naturally.
Oh, wow. Wow. So you found that you had certain spiritual gifts, let's say, that allowed you to deal with some of that?
Yeah, I think, I feel that all of us has, you know, all different sides, and that our intuitive or spiritual sense is what people call our sixth sense. And I feel I was just more open to it, having been tested before in things in my past life. I had to regroup. And part of it is that if anyone's deal with pharmaceuticals or pills or anything, so many of them have side effects, and my body was just, I couldn't take it. We tried like 18 different types, and it was just really taking its toll. And either at that point, you know, a lot of people, that's why I think when people get cancer, you see some people either persevere or shortly after the diagnosis, unfortunately, they pass, because there's so much toxicity with what we're given in our bodies that it really takes its toll. So yeah. I took a spiritual route, and I'm quite intuitive, and decided, you know, I wanted to be here. And literally, like, I was in a brace, I was bandaged, you know, my face, different parts of my body, I hurt my pelvis, all this other stuff. And what I did was my eyelids didn't hurt, and so I focused in on, like, the energy from my eyelids, like, mm-hmm. seeing that laughing and spreading through my body. And that's part of the focus, the reason I focus on happiness, because our endorphins get raised when we're at a state of being happy. When we're actually sad, there are a lot of biological things that go on that if we stay in a sad or depressive state, it doesn't help with healing.
Right, right. So you have a practice, what do you do for a living?
Yeah, what I do is I consult with both individuals and organizations or businesses, and the name of my business is Spice Bliss, SpiceBliss.com, and I try whatever that person's bliss is. Some people it's marriage, some people it's health, some people it's, you know, making money, whatever it is, I focus them on you can do it and how do we get to that point. And my whole approach is that I want the person to be able to do it on their own. I don't want it to be like where they have to keep coming back to me. So I like putting a plan together where how can you, you know, have the confidence, and what are the tangible techniques that you can do to achieve your goal, whether it's getting through cancer, whether it's dealing with Parkinson's, whether it's improving the bottom line at your business. These sorts of things.
Right, right. Well, do you have a website that people can go to and find out more?
Yeah, the website is spiceblisss.com.
Okay, so that's Spice with an S, right?
That's Spice with an S.
I see, okay, for sexuality, I like that.
Right, okay, yes, cool. Exactly. Very important component.
Very important.
that's a very important, I mean, one of the things I found when I help women and couples with fertility is that often it can lead back to a lot of couples are not having a healthy sex life. So the reason that fertility can sometimes not work, a lot of the IVF treatments, is that it's almost like you're putting oil in a car when the engine, there might be something that needs adjusting. It's like you're not getting to the core problem. And, you know, part of my approach is you have to get to the core problem in order to figure out how to do it. And so funny part is there are a lot of people who just don't have fulfilling sex lives, and it affects their ability to have kids.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I know a few, but we're not going to mention them now. Okay, Dawn, thank you so much for calling. This is fascinating. Go to Spice with an S, S-P-I-S-E, bliss.com, and you can find out more about Dawn and what she does. And well, congratulations to you, all the best. And it seems like you know what you're doing and you're enjoying it, so that's the most important thing, I think.
So, yeah, I love it.
wonderful. Okay, well, thanks again, Dawn, and thank you for calling, and all the best.
Thank
you.
Have a blissful day.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, did you hear that, TJ? Have a blissful day.
Have a blissful day. Yeah, I'm just trying not to get killed by homeless people.
Oh, okay.
Jesus.
Cool. All right, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back right after this.
This Halloween, prepare for the invasion.
Ah, my BlackBerry doesn't work in Kansas.
They came from Wall Street. In 2008, the New York financial market suffered a devastating crash. After the fallout, thousands of brokers and hedge fund managers attacked the heartland.
You folks new in town?
Yes, I'm Ben, and I work in derivatives. And this is Catherine. She specializes in overseas bond markets.
No!
They came from Wall Street. Keep telling yourself it's only a correction. It's only a correction.
What do you mean you don't take American Express?
They came from Wall Street, slashing your portfolio this Halloween.
You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
There's something about the way you try to look. It's getting right to me, deeper than it really should. What are you, an angel, or just looking that good? When you take your time, you are so divine. I'm not surprised, I'd like to watch you in this light. Tonight. There's something
Shitty talk radio proliferates the internet to save the world.
It's Sam and Susie in the morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And for those of you just joining us, Susie's out of the studio today.
Yeah, where is she today?
I guess some car trouble that started last night, so she would let me know in advance.
Oh, I'm happy.
So that was good. Yes, absolutely. We always love to have you here. So you guys are awaiting a baby soon.
Yes.
Right?
Awaiting a beautiful baby.
Very excited.
Yeah, can't wait. Don't know what we're having yet. We're going to know we know what we're having, but we haven't been informed. We got the gender from our doctor, and my wife is Andy. Andrea, her girlfriends who are running her baby shower, they have all the information. They know what we're having. So there's people walking around out there that know if we're having a boy or a girl.
Right, right.
We don't.
And you have the desire to find out in advance?
I really would rather be totally surprised.
Yes, I agree.
I would love to do it that way.
Yeah. That's what I did with both my kids. Yeah. You know, because look, when they're finally born, you call everybody and you go, it's a boy, it's a girl. And when it's not, it's just like, oh, they're here.
It's like the original edge of your seat drama from the beginning of time, you know? It's like, it's like the biggest suspense. And, it's God's who shot JR, you know? So I would prefer to, but the thing is it's just us two out here. Aside from friends, right, we have no family out here. And so there's going to be a lot of people in New York and in England, my wife's from England, who are going to want to participate and buy stuff for the baby and everything. And it's just easier if everybody knows what the gender is going in.
So, whatever.
It's been so long. We've been married for going on 11 years, and we're finally having this baby. And so, it would be nice to be totally surprised, but still, look, the surprise is going to be, you know, whose nose, whose eyes.
But isn't it cool to walk around with a pregnant woman knowing that? Yeah. You let people know that, hey, I fucked her.
I did this.
And I have a super sperm.
It's mine.
Yeah,
yes.
I can actually reproduce.
It's mine. I did this. My wife and her, and my, like introduce you to the vessel for my future child. This is my wife, Andy.
The vessel is correct.
Yes, the vessel for my child.
Yeah.
And, it's wonderful. And plus, you know, it's also great walking around with a pregnant lady because you get places quicker. I mean, you don't get places,
that's
you have
true,
to walk
yeah.
slow, but if there's a line, you can get to the front of it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because what are people going to say? You know, no?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, they seat us quicker. You know, we went to Cheesecake Factory, which is another perk of being married to a pregnant girl. She says yes to the Cheesecake Factory. A factory where they make cheesecake? I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm pregnant.
I think it's overrated, though, by the way. I'm not happy with their...
You know what? I tell you, Sam, they got one dish there.
Yeah.
Knocks in.
But what about the cheesecakes, though? I mean...
Cheesecakes I find to be overrated.
Yeah, I think they are.
But the rest of the factory?
Yeah.
Oh,
good, huh?
They got a dish there called Da Vinci, Pasta Da Vinci. It's in a Madeira wine... It's so fucking addictive. There is about twice a month I tell Andy, I said, we gotta go to cheese. I gotta get the Da Vinci chick. I gotta get it. But anyway, we went there like on a Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
Prime time for the Cheesecake Factory, you know, right there by the movie theaters. And, you go and you tell them, you say, and the same thing also at, what's the name of that Chinese joint? I talk about overrated.
Yeah.
But
you know what? It is a pretty good place.
P.F. Chang's.
Yes, P.F. Chang. I think it's pretty good. They have good food there, and it's a nice atmosphere.
You're a Jew. Jews are quite discerning when it comes to Chinese food.
Yes.
Well,
and
especially.
I think it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. I found it to be a little overrated.
Really?
A little overrated.
All right. Well,
I like the street corner. I like the down the street.
Yeah.
You know, no flash. Just, you know, pictures of the shit on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
But tell me something. What happens to the sex life when your wife gets pregnant? Is it better?
The what?
The same? The sex life?
The what?
Do you have any? Okay, you got me there.
Well, you know what? I must admit, the sex life has really ground to a halt. Mm. And it's my fault.
It is? Why? What happened?
She's horny as hell.
Really?
I'm afraid.
You're afraid to hurt the baby?
Yeah!
With that big schlong of you.
Well, no. Yeah! Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a thing. It's like it's the baby's house. It's like it's the...
Yeah. Do you think we stop looking at the woman as someone sexual when they become pregnant?
Well, you see, that's the thing, though. This is why we
start viewing them as a mother.
This is why my wife deserves, like, a friggin', you know, a great, great award for being my wife. Mm. This is the dichotomy. This is the paradox that is TJ. I absolutely... absolutely am viewing Andrea as even sexier than she's ever been, as beautiful. And there is something so goddess-like about my wife now that she's carrying my baby.
Yeah,
I mean, literally goddess-like.
They do glow when they're
and
pregnant.
And I want to bang the hell out of her, but I just don't want to go in there.
To put it very plainly,
I want to have sex with her. I want to make love to her, but I don't want to go in there. And I'm just being honest.
Yes.
I'm just being honest. I mean, you know what? And if she's listening, she knows I'm just being honest.
Yes.
Now, it's something I got to get past because I know that Andy is loving being pregnant. I know she wants to make love while she's pregnant.
Right.
And so I've got to do my part. I've got to do my part and be her lover.
Yes.
I just don't want to go in there.
Oh,
why? Maybe I should just knock first.
Maybe you need to examine that, though.
Maybe I should knock first.
Yeah.
Say hello. This will be over in just a second.
Okay. Well, what if you understand that people have sex all the time while they're pregnant and nothing happens?
I understand.
Nothing terrible happens.
I know. I understand that thoroughly. I'm just a mental patient.
I'm just sick. Yeah.
I'm just pathetic.
So what's going to happen?
I'll bang her.
Yeah.
I'll take care of her.
You will eventually.
I'll bang her.
The 9 month.
Yeah.
9th month.
Yeah. I'll get in there. Right, yeah. I'll get in there over at Cedars as we're delivering.
Let me tell you something, though.
Yes.
Okay, let me tell you something from experience.
Uh-huh.
Okay? When I was at the birthing room with both my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you something. There's something to be said about looking at it while it's happening.
Yeah.
I never looked at my wife then in the same light again.
Really?
It was not very pretty.
Oh, so you're saying stay with the face.
I say don't
look.
Stay up at the face. I say don't look. You know, and I took video also, but I, you know, nothing graphic or anything,
Right.
Of course,
right.
In good taste. But you there, and you look at this thing, and it's not sexual anymore, you know.
Right.
It's a beautiful thing to see a baby coming out, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But as far as sexually,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It was never the same again after
that. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what I'm saying is
stay by the face.
Yeah,
stay up the face, worry about the breathing.
You don't need to be right with the action.
No, I don't need to be down by ground zero.
Yeah.
I don't know,
that's just me.
I don't need to be down there by the gold mine.
Yeah, there you go.
Don't need to be by the
love
gold
canal.
Mine. By the love canal, the gold mine. I don't need to be down there by Niagara. I don't need to be there by the wizard's sleeve. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So you've been married 11 years.
11 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we met on a cruise ship. She was a showgirl. I was a comedian.
Wow.
Yep.
And you guys were young and everything. What were you, like 29 or something?
I was about 27 when I met her.
27?
About 27, 28 when I met her. And she was 23 or 24.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a kid.
Was a catch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 22, 23 she was. Yeah, she's a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, Andy, gorgeous. She's beautiful.
So did you guys get it on the first time on the boat? Since that's where you met?
The first time it ever happened was on the boat, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, our first date was in Cozumel, Mexico. Then we used to, because again, you know, it was just great being out. Because we had dates in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands, and St. Martin and St. Croix, and you know, all these, you know, great places, you know.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, they're seemingly great places. The Caribbean is overrated.
Yeah.
Everything outside of America is just the third world. Outside of America and, like, you know,
it is all
England.
Third world. But, if you take a cruise down to the Caribbean.
Yeah, well, because you don't have to spend the night.
Yeah.
That's what, you know what, man? I've spent the night in some of those places. You know, St. Thomas is a goddamn jungle.
Really? Because I guess because I was only there a couple hours, you know, so I didn't see any.
Cruise ship, get on. Yeah. Hey, get off. Hey, give me a straw hat. Okay, let me have get a banana daiquiri. Yeah. Get the frig back in that boat. Get your watch.
Yeah.
Get your duty-free cigarettes. Get your booze and get back in the friggin' boat.
Yeah.
You know, I've stayed there. I used to, because sometimes I would switch ships. I would get off a ship, mm-hmm. be there for a night. The next morning, another ship would come in. I'd get on that ship.
Right.
That's how it worked. Okay, gotcha. I didn't live on the ship. I would be there for like a week at a time. Mm-hmm. And, gunshots. I know a guy really? who was murdered in Nassau in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
A waiter on the ship, shot point blank.
Really?
Broad daylight on a street corner. Boom.
I know I was pretty disappointed when I went on my first honeymoon. We went to Jamaica.
Oh.
You know, I mean, it's filthy.
I hope it's still disinfecting.
It's filthy, it's poor, and you know, we went to an all-inclusive resort,
On
the way there, it was couples, which was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, this was like 20 years ago.
No, but I know the road. You had to take that road. You flew into Montego Bay?
Yes, yes.
You flew into Montego Bay. And you take the winding road that goes along the beach.
Where the bus driver drives like shit.
Like a fucking maniac.
Right.
And goes through, like, there's a town called St. Anne's, and there's another town. And you're winding through these roads, and it's along the cliff and all this shit.
Yes,
and you see nothing but poverty around
you. Poverty and, yes. And
sewage
in
the streets.
It's not pretty, you know.
No.
So I definitely recommend against Jamaica.
Yeah, it's a shame. You know, it's a shame.
And especially couples. I hear sandals is pretty nice.
Listen, my brother did sandals in St. Lucia.
Mm-hmm.
I think my sister did sandals in another town, another island. Mm-hmm. Sandals, yeah.
Pretty good.
You don't want to go to any of the independent all-inclusives.
Right.
You know, unless it's, well, you know, you go to Ritz-Carlton, you go to a Radisson.
Well, but you
Diamond.
Know, at the time, couples was like a really, really hot place to go. Yeah. And we went there and I was so fucking disappointed, you know. But it's also because you have to remember, you go to a place like Jamaica, you can't expect the luxury we have out here, you know. It's older hotels, you know, it doesn't matter
a shame, though, is that half the time these places, they put out the brochures. And
yes,
you know,
with the great pictures.
Until you get there, you don't know what you're getting into. And
you're
it's
right.
like, you know, I mean, I've stayed in some of the most god awful places in the world have been when I've had to stay in the Caribbean, you know. Mm. It really these are great places to just be there for a day, go to the beach, get some duty free shopping.
Right.
You know, the sun is the sun is the sun. At this point, it's like, you know, especially a place like Jamaica.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, the only place that was really the most civilized and the most Western was the Cayman Islands.
That's
the banking, you know,
and
tons of money. But of course, the most expensive place you could spend a dollar in the Caribbean is the Cayman Islands.
Is it really?
Oh my God. It's because it's on the British, it's a British currency.
I see.
They're a crown colony. They're a crown whatever. They're loyal to the crown. So, a protectorate of England.
Oh.
So they are, it's the most expensive place you could imagine. It's like, you know, you go there, you get a freaking hamburger. It's, you know, it's $14 for a freaking burger, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, you know, but I worked there for 2 weeks one time doing stand up at a resort in Cayman, which was nice.
Yeah.
But the Caribbean is really generally just disappointing.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Yeah. I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I took a cruise there and I was pretty satisfied. Mm-hmm. You know,
is great.
Yeah. I mean, we stopped off in Puerto Rico, for example.
Uh-huh.
Then, yes, you get off for a couple hours, you go back on the ship.
Right.
You don't have to sample the terrible food.
Right.
You don't have to, yeah.
Cruising, look, I know everything. If anybody has any questions about the cruise industry, I can tell you, matter of fact, I want to tell you everything that I can tell you because I've got such a bad taste in my mouth after spending so much years and cruises.
Well, because you've been
I know
there
the game they
time.
Play. I know the games they play. Mm. You know, I mean, for example, you know, I can tell you the markups that I saw. You know, they try to sell you the tours.
Yes.
On the ship, they sell you tours. Say, okay, so you can do the Rum Runner tour, or you can do the such and such tour, right? The friggin' markup is literally sometimes in the multiple hundreds percent.
Mm.
of what it costs the crew, because you're buying it from the cruise line.
Right.
The cruise line buys the tours from the local providers.
Right,
they'll
buy,
you know, it'll be $12 a person. You're spending $75 a person.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all
it's
about,
all supply and demand.
I'm all about capitalism and stuff. Yeah. And listen, there are some islands where I would tell you, you're crazy, you have to get the tour. When a cruise ship goes into Jamaica,
right,
unless you're just going to walk directly to the shopping area, if you want to see Jamaica, buy a tour.
Yes.
Because other than that, you're going to end up in a taxi with some friggin' Rasta who's high off his friggin' ass. I mean, yeah. Again, I know people that have been in near fatal accidents in Mexico and Jamaica. I know people have lost their lives in these countries. Wow. I knew a waiter who was just murdered in Nassau, Bahamas.
Amazing.
That's disgusting. You know what? I'm not going to get into politics, but you know what? I'm thinking about this guy who was pushing this cart this morning and collecting the bottles. Uh-huh. You know what's interesting, man? And this talks about our quality of life and about how much things cost. Hey, isn't it an interesting fascination? When you and I were kids, right? Mm-hmm. And you're about 12, 14. You're about 17 years older than me. You're 67 years old.
Is that all it is? My math was totally flawed. That was only 7, 8 years.
We're in the same generation. We're the same age, generally speaking. Point is, is that back in the day, we used to call them shopping bag people. Mm-hmm. It was a shopping bag lady. Homeless people. Yeah. And you'd see them, they had a big bag with them or whatever. You know, now, for some reason, and again, maybe I'm nitpicking here, but it's the shopping carts. Okay?
Yeah.
Now it's shopping carts. Yeah. And you see them out there pushing the shopping carts. And, you know, and you see broken shopping carts on the side of the road because, well, you know, there's no more warranty. The wheel fell off. So the homeless guy had to transfer all his belongings. Now, look, again, I say this with all respect and love and compassion towards my fellow human beings. We're all children of God. However, you know what, man? Right is right and wrong is wrong. Why is it that they are given, again, a society of enablers.
Right.
Why is it that they are given a free pass? There, to me, is no difference, Sam, mm-hmm. between walking down the street with a TV from Best Buy that I stole on my shoulder and a goddamn shopping cart from Ralph's.
Yeah.
You know how much a shopping cart? I Googled this. I looked this up. Shopping cart averages about $125 a pop.
Yeah, wow.
$125 a pop.
Are you serious?
They're heavy duty. Yes. They're made to last. Mm-hmm. They cost about $125 a piece to produce and buy for Ralph's, whatever, Gelson's. Okay, so you know there's a guy, and you'll see him with the commuting that you do now. You'll see this guy. There's a guy on Ventura Boulevard. He was actually on our neck of the woods the other day, near the studio. There's a guy on Ventura Boulevard. I've never seen this before. He's got a train. He's got, they're all connected with whatever, however, his, you know, they're great at rigging things up.
Oh, he connected the carts together.
fucking guy's got, and I shit you not, Sam.
Yeah.
I shit you to fuck not. He's got eight shopping quarter. He's got $1,000 worth of stolen merchandise. Mm-hmm. All tied up next to each other, but we're supposed to look the other way because that's how he lives. That's how he survives. He's got $1,000 in stolen property.
Right.
That to me, look, nobody is given a shopping cart. Nobody can build their own Ralph shopping cart. It is not, if that is not probable cause, and I'm doing my best to help you out too. If that is not probable cause to pull over a guy, but I bet you what, if you went and found city council person A, B, or C, and you said to them, if you saw them at the farmer's market, said, hey, Wendy Gruel, hey, Jack Weiss, listen, I got a thing here, I got a problem, and I think I got a little, maybe you call me crazy, but I'm just a constituent, you know, I'm just one of your people who pays your salary, $150,000, they got a nice little life. So, you know, I'm just wondering, if people push around these shopping carts, this one guy's got upwards of $1,000 worth of shopping cart alone.
Yes.
Why don't you guys tell the cops to pull him over? Why don't you tell the cops?
But what are the cops going to do with him?
But they would say, no, but here's the thing. And you know what they would say? They'd say, oh. Now, these are people supposed to help us enforce the laws and make our quality of life okay.
Right.
Oh, you want to take away? I mean, it's all they've got.
Yeah.
If my wife left me and I had nothing at all and I went to Best Buy and stole a TV and I'm walking down the street and they stop me, that's what I'm going to do. That's all I got.
Yeah.
All right, kids. You know what? The wife left you? Okay, go ahead. No, they would take me. They would arrest me. Sam, you know what? I'm telling you, man.
What do you want from the cops guy? What do you want from the guy? That's all he has,
really. Can't have it.
Okay. And so what are you going to do, arrest him?
Because it gets reflected in the cost of my eggs, my milk. You think Ralph's just writes it off? They pass it on to us. Mm-hmm. Liberalism. We enable these people. We allow them to walk around and settle in the sunny Southern California, settle into neighborhoods like Sherman Oaks and Valley Glen, and settle into these areas and walk around in quality of life that we're paying for, that we work hard for and earn quality of life. And you know what? Maybe it's a shitty way to look at it, but I don't want to just kick this person to the curb. they're already at the curb. Right. I don't want to kick the brake. No, but you know what? You gotta instill some form of right and wrong. And it's wrong to simply just steal a shopping cart or two or three or four. And this is one guy.
Okay, but I mean, you're picturing like a perfect world. It's not going to happen, you know? So the thing is, you have to set priorities. And to me, that guy is not a priority. You know, let him do that, fine. But you're getting like all riled
one,
up about
and
things
then
that
another,
are not important.
Sam, one,
but
and
it's
then
not
another.
Important.
It's not important. Yeah. It's not important. It's not important. Then don't talk about the guy who's waking up your neighborhood with them yelling back and forth. You can't talk about it anymore, Sam, because it's not important.
No,
you just said it.
It's important because he's waking me up.
Ah, exactly.
He's
but it is important.
Noise.
It's a quality of life
he's
thing.
He's making noise. No,
quality
absolutely.
Life, and it's
but
right
you're
and wrong.
Talking about stealing the cards, you know? I mean, I don't know. Look, I mean, you have a point, but what I'm saying is you shouldn't get all riled up about
oh,
it.
Oh, I should. It's good radio.
It's not fucking worth it.
It is. It is. I got nothing else to get riled up about. About to have Barack Obama. You know what Barack Obama said? Oh, isn't this perfect? This is the guy who wants to cut checks to everybody, right? So what does he say? What does Obama say about Election Day? Yo, take the day off. That's what he said. He's told his elect. He's told the constituents. He's told America. You know what? Take the day off for Election Day. It's a big day. Hey, motherfucker, don't show up for work. It's Obama Day, yo. Take the day off.
There you go. All right, we're gonna take another break. We'll be back right after this.
Whoa! Oh, is that working again?
Oh, the thing is back.
Excellent.
Back. You've been looking for the echo.
I've been looking for the echo, so I can do Basula stuff. Yeah,
absolutely. And this is your God with a fucking accent.
God is Israeli. God is from Tel Aviv. They say he's from Bethlehem, but no, he's from Tel Aviv.
We'll be back right after
this.
And he
spent time in Vegas.
Hello, George Takei here. You know, the only thing more gay than me and rad are the confines the FCC places on terrestrial radio. That's why I tune in to the internet and listen to LA Talk Radio. It's better than sucking cock. Oh my.
He tried to tell her, and she thought it right. Hand in hand, they marched on through the night. He knew the answers she'd hoped to find. It'll just take a little time, just a little bit of time. It wasn't easy, but how could they fail? Though love can blind you just like a veil, he knew the price was worth the strain. There was so very much to gain. So much love was there to gain. And they flew so high that they lifted off the ground. They locked themselves away in the magic they had found. Every day they tried. Shadows, well, they struggled on, went up and down, did right and wrong. Misunderstandings were put aside, and the gap became too wide. You cannot bridge a gap so wide. Though they flew so high, they lifted off the ground. They locked themselves away in the magic they had found. Every day they tried to make paradise their aim. Oh, in the end there's nobody to blame. There's never anyone to blame.
Do-be-do-be. only time and the way that it was spent. They missed the signs to walk away. Circumstances made them stay. Much too late to break away. Oh, they flew so high, they lifted off the ground, and they loved themselves away in the magic they had found. Every day they tried to make paradise their aim. In the end, there's nobody to blame. No, there's never anyone to blame. Though they flew so high, they lifted off the ground, they loved themselves away in the magic they had.
Sensuous when a woman starts talking dirty, you know? You're not expected to in society,
you
know?
It's taboo.
Yeah, kind of. Give us another one. Let's hear another one. A really nasty one.
I'm not asking for love. No long language afternoons of touching and caressing. I'm asking to fuck. To take the whole of you into my ride. To tear your cock from your body with my cunt. To bathe in your cum and lick myself clean. I'm not after love. I'm asking to fuck. No soft, lovely words and feelings shared. It's better to be your whore than your lover. I want to throw you, rip away your clothes, surprise you with indecency, shove my tits in your face and beg for you to suck them. Sailors have manners compared to me. I'm not asking for love. I'm asking to fuck and be fucked.
Ooh, wow. I love it.
That was good. I'm actually turned on. You're definitely a cunning linguist, you know that?
It's Sam and Susie in the morning on LA Talk Radio.
Bam, bam, bam. And we're back.
Cunning linguist.
Yes, cunning linguist.
Doing cunning stunts.
Yes, she is. And that was a poet, mind you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
I
a nice poem.
I want you to taste me. I want you to put your breath.
I
want to
fuck. I want to do this. Yeah. Yeah, I miss Susie today.
Well, who wouldn't miss a girl who never wears a bra and always wears little mini skirts?
There
and
you
stuff.
Go. There you go. Now, this is not a reflection on you. It's just a, you
no.
Know.
I'm saying I miss her too. You know, that's my point. It's like, well, yeah, you miss that girl who walks around with no bra and mini skirts.
Yeah,
you know, it's like
she's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
we love you, Susie. Anyway, I wanted to bring up something we were discussing the other day when you were here about on election day, maybe doing sort of like a continuous show,
a continuous roundtable.
You know, either like people coming in and out all day.
Yes,
we can keep track of what's going on.
Yes,
of the results coming in and everything, and we can talk about just anything.
I think there's a lot. I think there's a lot that we can keep our eye on that day. I think everything from what will inevitably there will be voter fraud. Contentions. There will be reports of this going on and that going on, and no, there's a fight broke out in Miami and this and that and there. You know, between that and just different reactions from the different campaigns to those news stories. I think it'd be a fascinating thing to do. I think it'd be cool to do an ongoing roundtable.
Yeah, I think so. So that's what we can expect. You know, I mean, take advantage of the fact we're in media now, you know, and have our give our own little take on the on the elections. Now, do you think it's going to be pretty close, the elections this year?
There was a time when, I mean, look, Obama's going to win.
Right.
That's how I'm looking at it.
A feeling it's still going to be very close.
I think it's going to be close. There was a time when I really thought it was going to be a landslide.
Oh, yeah?
There was a time when I thought we were looking at a Reagan, like, you know, he was going to take every state except Arizona. But now even Arizona is evidently up for grabs, and that's McCain's state, for crying out loud.
Really, yeah.
Well, if it's not up for grabs, it's not as strong as it should be. Yeah. But anyway, there was a time when I thought we were looking at 49-1, you know, 47-3, that he was just going to run the goddamn table.
Yeah.
But you know, there seems to be, go ahead, sorry.
No, no, I mean, what I'm thinking is that I think the country is still divided right in the middle, you know? And if you look at the last two elections, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
It was very close, and I think we're still in that state where, it's going to come down to a few votes, I think.
I think that there's been a lot of people who would have, I think there's going to be people voting for McCain who would have liked to have voted for Barack, but one of the reasons why it's going to be tight is what's making it is sort of the too little too late thing. I think only in the last – you know, if people watch a football game or they watch a basketball game. If any sport, what game would you watch?
Football?
Football. Yeah. Okay, so you know, you'll see a team, you know, suddenly in the last 2 minutes rally and they'll play with desperation and hope – and you sit there and go, why didn't they play this way to whole cut? Why? Why did they wait? Why, if they played with half this enthusiasm, they'd have been winning this game and I wouldn't be having a heart attack here. If McCain had been fighting and talking and campaigning since June the way he is in these last 2 weeks, this would have been a non-issue. You know, where was McCain talking about the Stephen Mansfield books? Where was the McCain campaign demanding these tapes of Obama toasting these Palestinian organizers? You know, why only in the last 2 weeks has McCain come out with the word socialism?
Yeah,
you know, Barack didn't suddenly just start talking about Marx and, you know, Marxism. And I mean, he didn't just now start talking about redistributing wealth. It took this Joe the Plumber guy a happy accident for the Republicans. You know, Barack happened to walk up the wrong driveway.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was you know, they're not stupid. They don't just go to neighborhoods. They go to neighborhoods that they know are safe Democrat neighborhoods, so they don't bump into. They don't have Joe the Plumber moments.
Yeah.
So my thing is that this all this too little too late has put enough of a dent. Right now, let's see. As of right now, the latest polling shows the Rasmussen poll shows Obama +3. That's within the margin of error.
Yep.
People are questioning the polls themselves just based on the Bradley effect.
Yeah.
Which, have you heard about the Bradley? Bradley effect, you know, Mayor Tom Bradley, mayor of Los Angeles back in the 70s and 80s, ran for governor of California. And the tracking polls had him winning by like 14 points because people up and down California wanted to say, yeah, I'm voting for the black guy.
Mm.
And when they went to the polls, they didn't vote for the black guy.
Really?
So they call it the Bradley effect. People guilty. They don't want their answer on the phone. They don't know who the hell's calling.
Yeah,
you know, I'll be voting for Barack. Absolutely.
Yeah,
so they're concerned about this Bradley effect. Now, there are some polls have him up 7-8 points.
Really?
But some of these daily tracking things, it's going to be close. Mm. Barack's going to win, but it's going to be close.
Yeah. So you say the polls are probably not accurate.
Right? I think the close ones are accurate. People talk about how McCain is having a campaign in Florida, but in what should be and what has always been a Republican stronghold. Well, that's one thing. But you know what? Barack is in Ohio. Barack is in Pennsylvania.
Right.
You know, Barack's been in Pennsylvania. They're both in Pennsylvania. So, you know, this is not an open and shut thing, you know. It ain't a done deal.
I just think there's many people in the country, probably including people that are associated or, let's say, affiliated with the Republican Party that have had enough of the Republicans. I think it's time to change. And that's why, you know, and that's the thing. I don't think this time it's about the man so much as it is about, I think, wanting to change You know, I mean, yes, he goes with the word change, but I'm using it in a way of like, let's take a break with the Republicans and see what the Democrats can do. We've already seen for 8 years what the Republicans have done for us. Right. Let's take a break and go the other way and see what happens. You know, we can change our minds again after 4 years.
Wow.
But
that's what's going to happen. I mean, part of me, you know, says, you know what, take it.
Yeah.
Take it. Take this sinking ship. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm the first, especially the way I live my life these days, I'm the first one to admit when I'm wrong.
Right.
And you know what? This is the thing is, you know, people just don't get what it is that's potentially on the way. If they're concerned, again, if people are concerned about these 8 years of the Republicans and conservatives and all that, two of those 8 years, it was only Republican rule for the first six.
Right.
And you throw the wrench in there, which was which was the war. Okay, but I'm saying it was a House and a Senate and the White House. Okay,
right, and everything was Republican at
the
time.
Right, right.
Yes.
Now here's the thing, though. Now, if people are concerned about, you have people saying they don't like the extreme left or the extreme right. Okay,
right.
There's people like you who don't like even the extremes of liberalism. Of course, right. Now you're a businessman.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not all about socialism and communism. You're not there.
Yeah,
and I'm a Republican.
It's not about business, but I just
believe you're a businessman.
In the American system.
Right,
absolutely.
Right. Now I'm a Republican, but in no way do I like fascism and Nazism.
Mm-hmm.
Of course not. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing: we never did get a chance to see a full blown, over the top. Conservative. If people are concerned about the last 8 years, okay, or those first six, especially when he had the House and Senate,
right,
we're about to enter into a situation with extreme liberalism.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, House and Senate. The Senate now, something that has not been, not even those first 6 years of Bush,
mm-hmm.
a 60-vote majority, which means rubber stamp.
Yeah.
We're talking about Obama with a Congress. Both houses
that
will give him whatever he wants.
Okay, but it was the other way.
No, it was not, Sam.
For the first six years.
No, it was not, Sam.
Why?
Because in the Senate, there was not a 60-vote majority.
Okay, but there was a majority in Congress.
Doesn't matter. They can override.
Republicans had both.
But that's the thing. But when you get into the 60-vote majority, when you get into the two-thirds majority, Sam, that means you could have... You could have the biggest, loudest Republicans in the world.
Right.
They can't do nothing about it. The Democrats were always able to stick their nose in and always able to pull a Republican over here. They were always able to get something over there and kind of wrangle something and mess things up or do whatever, make their voices heard. They counted. Democrats counted because there was not a two-thirds majority in the Senate to overturn everything.
Right.
Going into this, Sam, if they pick up the seats that they're looking at picking up, we're talking – they call it a supermajority. We're talking about checks and balances, except for the Supreme Court, out the window.
Yes.
We're talking about liberalism potentially really for the first time, Sam, an experiment in socialism.
Mm. You think so, You think,
Sam,
that's what's
it's what
happen?
They do.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Barack has said it. It plain as day. It's good to spread the wealth around, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, people like you and me are going to be contributing to people who don't pay taxes.
Right.
40% of the people in America don't pay taxes. Of the top 50% of the 50% of the taxes is paid by the top 2% of taxpayers, Sam.
Yeah.
And again, we're talking class warfare.
But what I'm saying is if you get the Republicans and the religious right in power, then we become a religious country, which we already are. Okay? This country is so fucking religious. It's, you know, I mean, because all our politics, not all of it, okay, but most of our politics seems to be affected by people's religion, you know, and that's, you know, when you have a president in the White House that tells you that God talks to him, but then it seems like Barack Obama is probably going to say the same thing.
Barack Obama's,
you know,
full of shit. Barack Obama
haven't heard what we just heard.
Barack Obama's full of shit. I'll tell you why he's full of shit. He talks about, this guy's talking about, you know, he talks about how he was in his church for 20 years. Sam, if you went to the same temple for 20 years and it was the same rabbi for 20 years, every Saturday, same rabbi.
Right.
You know, same cantor, singing the same songs note for note.
Right.
You know, you go
especially
in there.
Especially with the hatred that you heard there from Wright.
You get an idea of what, you know, of what's going on. Again, I was talking about with the guy how it was disingenuous how he left. It was politically expedient and it was full of crap because he stood there, Sam, and on that day, before he finally walked away from the guy, he was telling people, look, I didn't, you know, you don't hear everything. I wasn't aware that he was such a hateful whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lie, Sam. It's
that's a lie.
You know what I mean? It's a lie. So, you know, Barack has got no God. Barack is a... Again, if we could get... Give me 3 hours about those 10, 15 years of this guy's life. Mm-hmm. Let me know where... Was this guy praising Che Guevara? Was this guy praising Fidel Castro in college? Was he as... Now, listen, this is all speculation. I don't know. And I tell you what, the reason I don't know, because I don't know, because nobody knows.
Yeah.
Tell me, what was this guy talking about in college? What was this guy talking about as a professor? What did he talk about over coffee when he was a student at Columbia? Somebody give me an insight, because that's what's going to give me some knowledge as to what happens when this guy walks into the White House and he has a rubber stamp, a blank check.
Yeah.
When we start talking about redistributing the wealth, Sam, I'm telling you, man, it's really creepy.
But you know what? All I'm saying is, no matter how much information you had about him, you'd still vote Republican, because that's what conservatives do, is they justify everything without really. And that's why you have a majority of talk radio being conservative.
And you know what else too, by the way? Don't be surprised. And we're in this game now. Okay, now granted, we're in the internet and we're not going to be affected by it. However, have you ever heard of the Fairness Doctrine? The Fairness Doctrine was in place until the 70s, I believe it was. But basically, it's kind of like the idea of free time, of equal time.
Oh, yes. Okay. That
it's,
I know.
It's like equal time, but it's actually kind of worse than equal time, because what it is it's about programming. Mm. And the way the Fairness Doctrine is implemented is, basically, if a station has TJ McCormick, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and whatever, they have to provide equal amount of time for a liberal, a counterpoint. Now, this has nothing to do with, I mean, right now it's still in effect basically for politics, for elections and stuff. But in general, this is called, it's called the Fairness Doctrine. Now, what that does is, the reason that that's, first of all, an assault on the First Amendment, and why, and I was talking to Johnny Dan about this yesterday. Johnny, you know, some people are kind of selective when they start talking about their passions. Yeah. I'm not. Uh-huh. You know what? I look at Barack Obama, because they've been talking about his people in Senate right now have talked about the Fairness Doctrine. Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, the head of the Senate. That people like Rush Limbaugh, here you go. You know, you got radio stations out there with a bottom line. Everybody's got a bottom line. You're a business owner. You got a bottom line. My wife is a bottom line. Radio stations have a bottom line. What's going to happen is, they're going to be forced to either make a choice of either paying for some liberal talk show host to counter Rush Limbaugh, who is the cash cow of all cash cows, as you know.
Right.
All right,
mm-hmm.
He makes more than $20 million a year. Mm-hmm. Let alone what his station makes, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is a cash cow. So either somebody, and there are still mom and pop stations out there. There's maybe like 9 left in America, but they're out there.
Yeah.
But these companies, they're going to have to make a choice. Do we shell out money for a liberal that nobody's going to listen to?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we cut our noses?
Why wouldn't anybody listen to a liberal?
They don't listen, because look, the one attempt at liberal at one liberal network has been a miserable failure.
America, right?
America has been nothing. They get peanuts worth of people.
Yeah,
listening.
But that's just one place, you know. I mean, you know,
Sam. You know, I'll tell you why people don't listen to liberal radio. I'll tell you why that the rest of the shows on here that you're not going to find somebody being able to go on and on about liberalism, because you know why? There's nothing to talk about when it comes to liberalism. There's nothing to talk about. It's all about goddamn feelings. There's no facts and figures. It's about make it right or make it wrong and this and that. There's nothing to talk about. There's nothing substantial about liberalism.
I guess not when you're a conservative.
When you're a liberal, there's nothing to talk about.
Plenty to talk about. There's to talk about the right of a woman to choose, and there's a right of gays to choose, and so forth.
Right, and you know what? When it comes down to something like a woman's right to choose, I'll be able to sit there and I'll give you. I can come with stacks and stacks of proof about heartbeat and fingerprints and personality and sucking a thumb and look at this picture and look at that picture. And all the liberals have to say is, but it's only fair.
No, it's not about fair.
It's not about
fucking fair. It's about the fact that a woman... Let me ask you a question.
Sure,
Let's say we take a hypothetical here, and you have a daughter.
Uh-huh.
Now, she gets raped.
Right.
And gets pregnant.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Well, if she's raped, then you know, it's one of those things where you got to take it on a case by case thing. I'm not.
But it's illegal. If we make it illegal,
well, see, that's the thing. That's why, by the way, sadly, this conversation is kind of like nipped in the bud, and it's why I don't participate much in an abortion debate, because right. It's a moot point. It's never going to be illegal again. Nobody is going to make it illegal. And as far as I'm concerned, my hypothesis is that it's not going to be illegal.
Except if you get a very strong conservative
it's
president.
It's still. You know what? It's too much of a. Then it would become a states' rights issue. That's what it would be. It's never going to be illegal in this country. It's been legal for too long.
Right.
And I just think it's been. I stopped fighting that fight a long time ago. I stopped thinking. I think about it. I pray about it. But I don't. I just don't. You know what I mean? And look. And it gives me great consternation because I'm a Catholic. I'm a faithful guy. But at the same time, I have a very, very logical brain. Mm-hmm. And I don't. I have a hard time looking at it very black and white. And non and just no. I am a very open-minded guy,
right.
in terms of the idea that, you know, that you got to figure there's got to be exceptions. I don't think it should be illegal based on the fact that it's going to end up. I don't think it should ever happen. I think people, when they do, see, this is where I part. I believe that I think that people have to answer for things like that,
right.
I think that. Ultimately, down the road, it's a personal thing, but I don't think it should be illegal because simply the fact that nobody should be going down the back alleys where they're going to be going. I don't want to see 16-year-olds going to Mexico.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To get a hanger shoved up them. It's disgusting.
Exactly.
Okay,
and that's what I'm saying.
No, and yet the thing is though, Sam, is again, you know, we talk about why conservatism is so huge. Again, it's because conservatives talk about facts and figures. You know what? Don't even try to do it because he's not going to let you pass. But here you go. You mm-hmm. vote for me. I'm going to give you this dollar.
Mm-hmm.
All right? But no, you just take the dollar. Stop trying.
Mm-hmm.
But take that dollar. Take the dollar. Now, that guy's got $8 billion. Don't even try to get the $8 billion. Take this $50.
Mm-hmm.
Be happy. All right? And I'll see you next election day. Now, I'm going to go back and finish my steak. That's right. Liberalism, goddammit. They suck the spirit out of people, and that is the beginning of socialism and communism. They yeah. suck the spirit,
but
and they want to make everybody the same.
But why is it that conservatives like to always speak like in generalizations? I just spoke very specifically. No, you need to speak specifically
okay.
of George Bush
okay.
and how he fucked up this country in the past 8 years to the point of beyond recognition.
Yeah.
And I knew exactly that's what he was going to do. I don't know how,
uh-huh.
but I knew.
Okay, let's see. He fought a war. I think he fought the right war, but I don't think he prosecuted it the right way. I think that Saddam Hussein he gave him chance after chance after chance. I think that we went in and fought that war only after we exhausted.
But how do you go into a war like this without an exit strategy? That's what I want.
Well,
to
that's
know.
My problem too.
Yes.
But I'm saying is that the war was the right thing to do,
mm-hmm.
and the whole world talks about how, you know, he gave the guy every chance to surrender, every chance to negotiate, every chance to let the inspectors in, every chance.
Right.
So then we go and we finally fight this war that had to be done because this guy was a goddamn murderer. Mm-hmm. The guy was a murderer. There are rape rooms. There was a mobile rape room that was right. that's on tour in Iraq right now.
Right, right. But
it's
the question is it really our responsibility to go and take care of that? You know,
yeah, because you know what? When the guy's murdering a million of his own inhabitants up in northern Iraq, the right. Kurds up there,
right.
yeah, you know what? Somebody's got to step in and
exactly.
take care of it.
Exactly, and that's what I say. The United States. is the only country qualified to be the cop of the world, and we need one.
Right.
We need one. So I agree with you. But the thing is, you don't go into a war without an exit strategy.
I thoroughly agree.
And we don't even have – it's not that we have a bad one. We didn't have one, period.
I think, you know, before you even get to the exit strategy – and by the way, let's all take note, friends. I'm talking in specifics here, okay?
Mm, okay.
And so here's the thing is that, you know what? We went in there not – forget the exit strategy. We went in with the wrong strategy. I want to take – if I'm going to fight a war, I want to fight a war like it's goddamn D-Day. I want to take it to them like we took it to them in Bastogne, like we took it to the goddamn Germans, so I think they should still keep their fucking mouth shut. Holocaust was only 60 years ago. They're still on a fucking statute of limitations. They're going to shut their goddamn mouth. I hear one more friggin' kraut pass judgment, or frog pass judgment on this goddamn country. If I hear one more time how the French and the friggin' Germans, the krauts and the frogs, want Barack Obama, shut the fuck up. You have both. Yeah, one is an enabler and a friggin' runaway, pacifist. The other one is just was only recently buried the swastika. So they can both shut the frig up. Anyway, point is, we're going to go and fight a war. I want to go in there like it's Normandy. And I want to go in there, and I want to find every terrorist, and I want to kill them. And I want to take everybody, I want to lock them down. And I want to get this person over here, ask him some questions, or move him along. I want to fight the war like a war is supposed to be fought. Right. Not with handcuffs on the soldiers. Not with a 50 chain of command where they got to call and ask about rules of engagement. Can I fire on this guy? Go. Can I fire on this guy? Over and out. Let me know. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting. I got him on my side. Can I fire on this guy? Thank you, Bill Clinton. All of these rules of engagement. We're again. Listen, the whole downfall of how we fight war started with Bill Clinton. All right. Okay. It's like when we turned tail and ran in Mogadishu.
But it's the Republicans' specifics. Habit to like to blame everything on
no. It's, on I'm telling Clinton. You, I'm blaming this on Bush. This is
you
Bush.
Guys are blaming 9/11 on Clinton too.
No, I don't blame 9/11. I think there is some blood on Bill Clinton's hands because when the first World Trade Center bombing happened, he treated it like a criminal infraction.
Okay, well, you know what? This happened on George Bush's watch. So
yeah, it happened. It happened 9 months on George Bush's watch. 9 months he was president.
That's enough.
I'm telling. That's enough. It was Sam.
Listen,
come on.
You know what? If it was Bill Clinton's watch,
it was Bill Clinton's watch.
We would not have heard the end
USS Cole, the USS Cole, the Cole Bar Towers, Mogadishu, Somalia, the first World Trade Center bombing. All happened under Bill Clinton. What happened? Ugats. Nothing. The breakdown of the CIA, the intelligence, happened under Bill Clinton. What happened? Ooh, nothing. Breakdown of the FBI, the breakdown of the communication between the two, the wall of information. Bill Clinton. I'm not just whistling in the wind.
All right.
I think
you are. Yes.
I'm awesome. No, I'm not whistling in the wind.
No, you're very good at this. There's no doubt
about it. And I just spoke
it,
in specifics, and I'm a conservative.
Yeah, but I still don't accept that. I don't. I mean, that's just me, you know?
But I mean...
I'm not going to blame Clinton for this because you watch. No, as soon as Obama gets there, people are going to expect him to fix the economy,
I'm not blaming
fix everything.
I'm not blaming
you know?
This war thing on Clinton. I think one thing leads to another reason. It's a domino effect. Mm-hmm. It's a snowballing thing. I think if not but for Bill Clinton's approach towards terrorism, okay? Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for that, then it probably was going to happen a matter of down. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ, man. Yeah. Bill Clinton's a pacifist.
Well, you know, again, it's rather, I think, a simplistic view on this because the point is we never expected terrorist attacks like this. And, you know, we
so then how can we hold George Bush accountable? Now, if we never expect a terrorist attack like that,
because he should have expected it. I think that the administration should have expected something like this.
Listen, you know,
but at any rate.
I'm not a knee-jerk nothing. I'm absolutely ready to hold George Bush accountable for this debacle of a war. And I can also, and I think also, you know, we got to make sure we give credit for the fact that now that this surge was put in, things have been nice and quiet over there. Things are starting to pack up. They're starting to pack up in Iraq. You know what I mean? You know what's amazing too? It's going to be real funny. Barack's going to get in there. Barack's going to get in there. If he gets in there and like within 3 months, this whole war in Iraq really looks like it's pretty much done. Mm-hmm. Are we going to suddenly give Barack credit? For ending
well,
the war.
Well, I don't know if he's the one that is in power when the war ends. Yes.
Ha! Okay. Oh my God!
All right.
That's amazing.
All right.
But you know, but really, I just and you know, but I'm not a knee jerk nothing. I think gay marriage, fine, get married. Go ahead.
You're
Proposition
okay with that.
8.
Yeah.
I'm whatever it is. I'm no
but
on 8.
I remember you actually changing your mind on the air.
Yeah. I'm again. I'm a conservative. You know, and the thing, man, is that 90% of most conservatives are just like me. We want to fight the good fight. We want to, you know, and we're about
no,
being.
I'm sure.
Up.
I'm sure. But you know, you know? What? The
put it this
to
way.
Hell is
a conservative, like me, sees that guy who's threatening me this morning, pulling his cart around. Mm-hmm. We see somebody's breaking the law, and we see somebody. You know, we know they could do better,
right.
And we'd love to see them do better. We'd love to see, you know, somebody teach them how to fish as opposed to giving them a fish. Democrats want to roll up. Liberals want to roll up and want to throw a blanket on them, give them another shopping cart, and you know, and put them up for the night and then see them back the next night and the next night and the next night in the shelter where I want to see them in their own goddamn house.
Yeah.
That's conservatism versus liberalism, man.
There you go. And this is TJ McCormick for you. You got a big,
not
big
wearing
serving,
a bra.
But got a big serving of TJ, and you're going to get another one, a 2-hour one at noon.
Yes, at noon, 1 hour and 10 minutes from now. The world of TJ McCormick on LATalkRadio.com.
There you go.
I'm glad you asked me to come
shameless
in. I love
plugs.
Doing this. I love doing this with you,
yes,
Sam.
Wonderful, wonderful.
I really
and
do.
And the show really became political, but you know what? It's
it was entertaining.
We needed a little break.
It was entertaining,
yes,
political.
And it's very relevant.
The way I talk is very entertaining. People are out there rolling
say
in the
so
aisles.
Yourself, yes.
Yes.
And I just wanted to let everybody know on Monday we're going to have two special guests.
Cool.
A couple of writers who wrote the book No Time to Think, The Menace of Media Speed and the 24-Hour News Cycle. Okay, and this is written by Howard Rosenberg, who is a Pulitzer Prize winner. He's written, he's been a TV critic on LA, on the LA Times for about 20 years, and he's joined with Charles Feldman, who has worked for CNN for many years, and so I think this book is pretty important. They're going to be here in the studio, which
great.
We're honored. And so I invite you to be here Monday, a day before the election.
Yeah, and right? then Election Day, we'll be letting everybody know, I guess, Sam, about what our formal plans are for Election Day. But make this one of your sort of random choices there. Make us your change of pace. You know, get away from. Well, you should never watch CNN or MSNBC, but take a break from Fox News. The official news station of the world of T.J. McConnell. Take a break from Fox News and come over to us and listen to us, you know, or mute the TV and keep us on in the background on Election Day. Yeah. And it'll be me and Sam
and Johnny
Dam and
all our guests and everything. So yeah. It should be a fun day.
Yeah, probably some porn stars and stuff
porn
like that.
Porn stars commenting in the
let's
election.
Let's get Satine Phoenix in here.
That would be awesome.
You know what? Half the country thinks we're going to get fucked on Tuesday, so we might as well have a porn star in here.
And on that note, we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, gang.